everyone. It's great to see you all here. I'm Doug Fullington, and you're going to hear from me for about 20 seconds. We're here to enjoy a conversation with Peter Bull and James Moore, and just a couple logistics. We'll be down here in the lecture hall until just ahead of 6:30, and then you'll be able to go upstairs and find a seat in the auditorium. The doors open at about 6:30. Dress rehearsal starts at 7, and I think that's all we need to know, so I'm happy to pass the mics over to the two of you.
Thanks,
sir. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, we got a happy, sad occasion coming up because this guy's going to retire not too far in the future, which is the sad part. But the happy part is all the joy you brought to our lives through performance over 20 years. So how are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel great mentally. My body's a little upset, but, you know, otherwise... Yeah, I feel great about it.
Yeah. It's been a beautiful long road. When I came in here, I won't say I ever had favorite dancers, but I did say that I would probably stay in this job until and or James or Carla Korbs did their last show, and then it would be time for me to go. So I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, you got to keep going.
You're going to have to come back for a little while longer.
Character roles.
Yeah. You're from San Francisco originally. Tell us how did this entrance into the world of ballet begin?
Yes, I was taking ballet classes with Miss Tilly. Tilly was a dancer with San Francisco Ballet, and she had a small school, and my older sister was taking ballet classes, and my mom and I would go pick her up, and I would dance around the studio, and Tilly said I needed to take classes, so I started at 4, and then when I was 9, San Francisco Ballet has a program called Dance in Schools, which is very similar to our Dance Chance program. It's an outreach program that came to my elementary school. We did a series of movement classes over a number of weeks, and I knew they were going to give out some scholarships at the end, so I really worked. And I got it. So I started at San Francisco Ballet School when I was 9, full scholarship throughout my whole training. When I was 15, I followed my friends Seth and Aaron Orza to School of American Ballet. I did two summer courses there, and then this gentleman asked me to stay for the year, and I got to study with Peter for a whole year when I was 15. And then I went back to San Francisco to finish my training for 2 years, and then, yeah, I started my career with Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. I was there for 4 years, and then Francia Russell came to stage Midsummer, and I was doing Puck, and she offered me a contract, and I said yes. I would love to come to PNB, and that was 2004, and I've been here ever since.
At San Francisco Ballet School, we see this at PNB School. Sometimes there's a community of young male dancers that find each other, they befriend each other, and they just keep wanting to come back. I don't know if it's for the community or for the ballet, but with the Orzas and a couple of other people that we know. Did you find that at San Francisco Ballet School?
Absolutely, yes. I didn't really have a lot of friends at academic school. You know, in middle school, you know, I already knew I wanted to be a dancer. So I started with zero period, and then I left at like 11 o'clock before lunch. So I wasn't really in, you know. And I had all my friends at ballet, yeah. And I met Seth and Aaron, they're twins. And you know Seth Orza, of course. I met them when I think I was 11 or 12. I have some friends that I'm still close with. My friend Nick, I met when I was 9. He danced with Ballet West, actually, some other places as well. He lives in West Seattle now, which is great.
Nice.
I do too. And, you know, I met some other people as well. Jonathan Peretta, I've known since I was 15. Benjamin Griffiths, I've known since I was around that age as well. Both of those guys were superstars back then too, so it was really obvious they were gonna make it.
It's such a small world, isn't it? You tend to find people all over the place, and then people come back as well. Tell us. Obviously, we want to talk about those PNB years, and I should say, for the last 5-10 minutes, I'll certainly open it up all of you for questions. But at the Pittsburgh Valley Theater, how did that opportunity come about, and what were those years like? And I know you met someone special while you were there.
Yes, let's start with that. So I met Kristen, my wife, in 2002. We're still together. It's wonderful. Yeah.
There's a tape recording.
Yeah, so I wasn't a high recruit out of school. You know, I just had dinner with Casey Hurd. He was in town. Mm-hmm. And we were just joking, you know, if you know, we're into sports, whatever. He was a first-round draft pick, you know, the equivalent of. He had, like, five contracts before he auditioned for a company. You know, like, yeah. He got into ABT when he was real young. I'm more undrafted rookie free agent. I had one contract to the Kansas City Ballet. And, you know, I really wanted to be in San Francisco Ballet. It didn't happen for me. That was pretty tough. But I had a teacher, Parrish Maynard, really amazing dancer. Spent most of his career at American Ballet Theater, but was in San Francisco to sort of finish his career. And he taught in the school. He's a wonderful teacher. He also staged...
Serious Pleasures.
Yes, yeah. Ulysses Dove, for us a number of years ago. But he knew Terrence Orr from American Ballet Theater. Terrence Orr was the director at Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. They talked, I flew out, and I did a year of school over there, and then I got into that company, and so spent 4 years there. So that's how that happened, and it was a great move in the end, you know. It was tough for me at the time, but I really got a lot of experience. It was a smaller company. We did a great rep, and the dancers were really great. It was a really close, tight-knit family. I still talk to a lot of those people, and actually Terry Marling, who just staged
Harold
in the Purple Crayon. He was a soloist in the company back then, and just wonderful dancer. And so it's nice to see him here at PMV just recently.
So Francia Russell is one of the most amazing stagers, and it's really compelling to have her, the meticulousness and also the right comments for the right coaching. You were Puck in the production. What did she pull you aside after and say, want to go to Seattle?
So I actually was thinking about leaving Pittsburgh around that time, and I had sent out a bunch of letters to some companies that I was interested in joining. I didn't think anything would really come out of it, right? And she came to Pittsburgh. We did the whole rehearsal process. She didn't say a word to me. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe she didn't get it. And my friend Aaron Ingley, who actually knew Francia from here, he was in the school. He was dancing at Pittsburgh, and he gave me a nudge. He was like, she's leaving. Like, you got to go talk to her. So it really almost didn't happen for me.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad he gave me that nudge to go and talk to her, because she was like, oh, yeah, I'll give you a contract. You just signed your letter of intent. And that was kind of a big deal, because, I mean, get into legalities of letter intent and if it's binding or not and whatever. Anyway, it all worked out.
Yeah, lucky us. James left out the part where he did come to study at School of American Ballet in New York, and we worked together for a year. He didn't love it, so he went back to San Francisco.
You know,
I followed him to Seattle.
It really was a great experience. The amount of talented young kids in that school, especially around that time, just... it's incredible. And I got to meet a lot of people, Carla Korbs and Sarah Orza, and so many dancers that I've got to spend my whole career with here. I mean, it's just it was an amazing experience. I really missed my teacher, Jorge Esquivel. I had a really deep connection with him, and he really inspired me a lot. So I wanted to go back and take some classes from him. You know, a funny story about Jorge, when he turned 50, he decided to make a comeback. And the company there was doing Swan Lake, and he was going to do Rothbart. And Rothbart in that production was a dancing role. Like, there was coupe jetés and tour jetés. And he did it. He went and took company class every day.
Wow.
He made a comeback. It was nice to spend some more time with him.
Yeah, I went to watch him teach in San Francisco. He really was a compelling teacher. And the attachment that he had to his students and they to him was really quite noticeable in the room. So.
Yes, he inspired a whole generation of young dancers during his time at San Francisco Ballet. He really had a deep respect for dance and ballet, especially, and really passed that on to all the kids. You know, just that the studio, he called the studio the temple, you know, that you got to respect it. And I always took that with me.
Yeah. So you found yourself at PNB. I know you had a good first year. I know some details about that. Ken Francis, you're always finding talent and lifting people up. I came along, and we were supposed to commission a work from Marco Gecca. And Marco Gecca has a fear of getting on planes, but he didn't realize this until he went to the airport. So it was 6 weeks before the premiere, and he called. He's like, I couldn't get on the plane. I was like, what? So we did have a solo that I commissioned from Marco for a little company called Peter Bowen Company. It was called Mopey. And we decided, well, we could still do sort of a PNB premiere by Marco Gecca by putting this solo Mopey in. So we flew out the guy that done it in New York, a friend of yours, Sean Swasey, and we taught it to three casts. And James was sort of this hunch that he might be good in it, but he was not only good, he was phenomenal. And the Mopey solo can be seen when James retires in the encore performance this year. But it was an explosion onto the map for Seattle audiences and for sort of a stake of claim of what you might be able to do in this company. But what was that experience like, if you can remember back then?
Yeah, I'd never seen a large ballet company do a solo before. So it was really exciting to see that on the rep. And Sean Swasey, I was suite mates with him and in the same class that year at SAB. So I was very familiar with Sean. It's very Sean, that ballet, and he just started teaching the material, and I don't know, I just felt an immediate connection to the movement. And if you remember with Mopey, it's just a lot of arms on the first crossing, and I thought it was so cool. You're not facing the audience, you're facing the back. It's just very, very unique piece, and especially for back then, I was used to doing a lot more classical ballet. This was very, very, very different, and I just could put myself into the movement for the first time. And you know, I hadn't really experienced that before. I think I was searching for it, and then when it just clicked with me, I decided I this is my opportunity. I gotta go for this, and I did. And yeah, it's.
Were you surprised by the reception that opening night?
Yeah. I think we weren't sure what to expect, right? It's so different than what the PNB audience had seen up to that point. But they loved it. Yeah, it was a really fun experience.
Humble guy. They loved it, but they also loved it. But it was like, sometimes there's a talent in your midst and you don't fully realize it. And that was the moment. It was like, wow, what can this guy do?
So. Yeah. I was in the core, and I remember him coming down to the dressing room, and I just loved how excited Peter was at the reaction as well. And so that was awesome also.
Yeah. An illustrious career, and there are so many highlights, and it's hard for us to pick, but there's a couple that I want to dig into, and I know this audience would like to hear a bit more about them. Not too many years after Mopey came Romeo in a brand new production of Romeo and Juliet. Which Jean-Christophe Maillot doesn't ordinarily come to visit companies when it's being staged. He has his people, he checks in. All the people called him and said, you have to come for this one. And so he flew over to see it. You got to work with him one-on-one in a lot of cases. Tell us about the discovery of the role of Romeo for you.
I never envisioned myself as a Romeo. I never thought I'd get that opportunity. I thought maybe if I was lucky, I'd get to do Mercutio, and I think I would have been really happy with that. And they pulled us aside after a class, and I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll be like fourth cast, get to do it maybe, or get to learn it at the very least. But I got to perform it with Nolani Pantesco, she was a principal at the time and already, and I was in the core. I've never done a full-length ballet before. But also one of those moments where I just sort of could feel the movement and identify with it, and I thought that I could put some of myself into it, and the experience was wonderful. They really, it wasn't just about, I mean, it was a different approach to acting, I think, on stage, where you used to go in toe heel when you walk, and there's a ballet pantomime that's the language of kind of, you know, speaking on stage without verbal communication, and they threw all that out the door, and they said, walk with your heels like a normal person, and relax your arms, you know, you don't have to hold them in a certain position. So it was like, you had to retrain yourself to be a normal person to do a ballet. It was weird. It was like a totally different approach. It's like, okay, I got to throw all that training out the door and then attack it from a different angle. But it was also the way that you attacked the material, where it was like the pantomime was built into the choreography, as opposed to you dance and then you use pantomime to say what, you know, the character's thinking. And so it was all built into one. And then there was all these elements of, like, you know, they do this thing where it's like quick, fast, where you do a movement quickly and then you slow down. And that was throughout. And then it was all about, you know, reaching beyond where you usually would, so that you just have this sort of expansive quality in your movement. So in all facets, it was a learning experience, and just one of the most inspiring, I think, times of my career. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Jonathan and Ben, and then your friend group as Benvolio and Mercutio was Jonathan and Ben, almost like you guys had grown up together. So it worked really nicely.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful experience to watch. And then another one I want to skip to is you worked quite a bit with Twyla Tharp in a number of different works. Mm-hmm. The one that sticks in a lot of our minds was Waiting at the Station, where Twyla really built a character that I always saw as a little bit autobiographical. I think Twyla saw herself in that character. That was a long process of development, a really kind of monumental work for us. Mm-hmm. Talk about working with Twyla.
I was freaked out beforehand. I was notified that I'd be spending a lot of one-on-one time with Twyla in the studio, and it's Twyla Tharp, right? I had the opportunity to work with her for Afternoon Ball, the creation of Afternoon Ball, and also Opus 111. And they were really physically demanding experiences. She was hardcore. She was, you know, for Opus 111, I remember towards the end of that process, we would run the ballet, and then we would go from the end to the beginning and just break down each section. And when you break it down, I mean, you're running that section again, and then you're running another section. And then we went back and ran it again. I mean, it was really physically taxing and mentally as well. And then I was going to be spending 6 weeks in the studio by myself with her. I was like, what is this going to be like? And she was wonderful. She was just incredible. And I didn't have a second cast for most of that time. You know, there was another dancer that was in there briefly and then was gone. It was just me again. But she was so generous, and I loved it because she gave me a lot of freedom. She would give me some prompts, and then I would kind of come up with some material and then give me some more. And usually that's terrifying, because I'm not a choreographer. I don't really like to improv as well. Like, that's not a strong suit of mine. But what happened was I had a lot of say into what the movement became. And just her prompts made sense to me, so that I could kind of take some material and tailor it to myself. And then the end result was that there was a ballet that felt completely natural to me. So not an experience you get all the time. I mean, every choreographer works differently. Some have an idea already of what to do, and they just kind of dictate the steps to you, and then you have to transform it. But that was a really unique process. And then Alan Toussaint's music, like, is wonderful. So I connected with that as well, and it was such a cool, unique experience when he came to play for the premiere. That was so fun.
Last season, well, we just announced Jessica Lang is going to be PNB's new resident choreographer. Super excited. Jessica's been a great experience in the studio. Jessica also grew up a bit by working with Twyla. She was in Twyla's touring group. I think they're very different people, but there's some similarities there. Last year, Jessica made Let Me Mingle Tears with Thee on You. What was it like working with Jessica?
I love working with Jessica. Yeah, she's just so inspiring. I don't know. I don't know what I can say. Like, I would love to work with her more, right? Like, it's so amazing that she's the resident choreographer now, because I think she has a connection with this company and the dancers, and you know, yeah, I don't know. I've connected with her work as well. I just, you know, I had a duet with Miles, and just, you know, you get into these situations sometimes where material is difficult, but if you're just fully invested and everyone in the room is invested, it just becomes kind of effortless. And that was one of those experiences with her.
One of the works, James and I have a dialogue, as we often do with retiring dancers, about what would you like to do in your final performance. One of the works that James brought forward was The Prodigal Son. An early role for you and an iconic role for you. Why Prodigal? Why Prodigal now?
It's a legendary piece, you know, and the son has been danced by all the greats, right? Peter, Brezhnikov, like so many, and then just of my generation as well, like Jonathan Peretta, you know, and so many, and like so many of the top flat dancers in the major companies, you know, it's like a real principal role in a major ballet for a flat dancer, you know, it's you know, Jonathan Peretta always equated it to like the flat dancer's Swan Lake, you know, where it's kind of a similar feat. I just love the history of it, and yeah, just to have the opportunity to dance, it's like, wow.
Yeah. It occurs to me as we talk about the roles you've done, there's James the dancer, but there's also James the actor, and Prodigal will showcase that. I mean, it's actually more acting than dancing, I always felt.
Yeah,
but same with Romeo, and even in a sense, Mopey, Marco Gecko said it's an angry or grumpy teenager in his room, so
yeah.
That was his idea, but there's a character to play in each of those. So,
yeah.
James, you were also, for a number of years, an artistic director alongside Noah Lang Fantastico.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people here know about Seattle Dance Project, but tell them about that.
So, yeah, Noah and I, we used to stand close to each other at bar, and we got a lot of opportunities to dance together, and just through like some, you know, conversations before class, we would just talk about things, and one of the things that came up was like this idea to form a group and explore being a director and what that would be like, and then also to have some opportunities or create the opportunity for ourselves to do some ballets that maybe we wouldn't get a chance to do here at PNB. We decided to go for it in late 2018 and started Seattle Dance Collective, and it was just a wonderful experience. It was very eye-opening into what a director does. It's quite a bit. I learned a lot, and it was really great. We did our live performance was Program One back in 2019, and unfortunately we got kind of cut short with COVID. But we switched to making films, and learned that we really enjoyed creating dance films, and so we did a number of those. I can't remember the number now, but it's quite a bit. I think it's in the teens, and those have been some of the really most rewarding times. And it's really great because we get to offer these experiences to our colleagues, and sometimes our colleagues will come up to us, and you know, not even just in PNB, but elsewhere in the dance world, and they'll say, "Hey, I have this idea. I'd love to do this. I don't have the means to do it. Like, what do you think about this project?" And you know, most of the time we have to say no, and we have to turn it down because we don't have a lot of opportunities to work. We just really did this on our layoff breaks, you know, or when we had some free time. But you know, in some cases, we were able to take on these projects, and one of those that happened recently was Dylan Wald, who had been struggling through a pretty major injury, the first sort of major injury of his career, I believe, and he wasn't sure, you know, if he was going to be able to come back, and he was, you know, really struggling, and I really, you know, he made the pitch to us, and it was like, yeah, let's do that, because, you know, I thought it explored the mental struggle of a dancer outside of a studio. And it was all about, you know, his struggle to return to the stage and, you know, if he was going to be able to. And it was kind of like this open-ended thing. He wasn't sure. Maybe his career was over. Maybe he wouldn't ever be the same. So really, really emotionally touching. And I thought that it was really a project that we wanted to take on. And so the film is called Vanishing Act, inspired by Lou Reed's song of the same title. And I really thought that that was maybe one of our best works that we did with SDC.
And SDC has projects ahead, or it's now laid to rest?
Yeah, we haven't announced it yet, but we have a film coming out.
Okay.
It'll be in the fall, and don't tell anyone. we'll do this last film, and then we'll see what happens after that. Noe moved away from Seattle. I've got a lot of things going on in my life, so we're kind of in different places now, and SDC's kind of become a different thing. But we'll talk about that in the future and see where it takes us.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of those things going on in your life, namely ballet schools. Can you give a plug for those?
Yes. So my wife and I, we opened two schools, and it's a franchise started by a really wonderful person, Genevieve Weeks. Laura and Jerome Tisseron opened the first franchise here in North Seattle, or I guess it's North Queen Anne, Fremont area. And then when they moved to France, or Monaco, they sold their school. And about a year after that, Krista and I, we've been thinking about what we wanted to do with our lives. You know, Kristen, she was a professional dancer, and then she moved out to Seattle, and she taught Pilates at PNB, and then she went back to school and then got her master's in education and was teaching English and history at Odell Middle School. And then we had our second child, Layla, and she was at home, and our priorities just kind of shifted. And you know, with my retirement coming, we tried to look at it as an opportunity to kind of decide what we wanted to do with this next period of our lives. And we knew that we wanted to prioritize family and being around our kids. And we took a look at tutu school, and it just made sense on a lot of levels. Kristen being, both of us being dancers, and Kristen being an educator, us having young kids, you know, Julian's 4 and a half, Layla's 1.5 years now. It just made sense. And so we went and opened two schools kind of at the same time, which was crazy, but we did it. And we've been open. We have a tutu school in Renton by the Newcastle border, and then we also have one down in Tacoma by the University Place border. And they're doing pretty well, so we're happy about that. And just love this this program, because we are able to offer the opportunity for really young kids to dance. You know, our age range is 18 months to 8 years. And there's not a lot of activities for children 18 months old, right? And actually, there's kind of a pilot program to explore even younger than that. So more news to come there. But really love that. And love that, you know, when we went to go view a class, that there was this absence of stress that, I think is kind of underlying, you know, any professional dancer's career. Like, you just have to dance at such a high level all the time that it's very difficult to keep up all the time. So to see these young kids just totally free, having fun, you know, exploring movement, music, and, of course, that added piece of socialization at a young age, we just fell in love with it. So yeah, we're happy to have two open schools now, and probably more to come.
Wow. Yeah. I was going to ask if Julian was studying, because he's 4 and a half, but I didn't realize that Layla was now old enough to study. Are they both participating?
She's eligible, and yeah, they're both in there. Not consistently, but we do have a recital coming up called Bravo Bash, and they better get in there if they want to learn the choreography. So.
I see the director hat on everything else. James, I want to ask you a bunch of questions about your 20 years, and just sort of random, all over the place questions. But What is the most embarrassing moment that happened on stage?
On stage?
Yeah. Or there hasn't been one, maybe.
I can't, I'm drawing a blank right now. Oh shoot, I know there's some. Okay, I'll go with this one time, you know, I was doing, we called it Russian back in the San Francisco Ballet's Nutcracker. It was Lou Christensen's. And I got an opportunity to perform the role. It's a company role. And there was three guys on stage, and I think I was 16 or 17. Got to do it, and there was a lot of pressure. I just remember a lot of pressure. And I was like, okay, I want to be in this company. Like, I got to do good. And I did pretty well, and took a bow on stage and ran towards the wing and fell down, like right before the wing. And I remember catching a lot of flack for that. So it was really embarrassing, but...
They're still talking about it.
Yeah, probably. It's like, oh, God, it's just running. You did all the hard stuff.
James is dancing tonight, so careful after he bows. don't name a favorite partner, because that is a dangerous question. There have been some really special moments. You talked about even the partnership with Miles and Let Me Mingle Tears with the Noe as the Juliet, and I know there were other Juliets as well, like I think Kelly Nakamura was one. What were some really meaningful moments that you'll carry with you forever that happened in this career?
Well, you know, if we're talking about partners, like, Dancing with Noe was like a revelation. Like I don't know if I have the right words. Like it's hard to describe, you know, when you have a connection with someone on stage. She, you know, like if we go back to the first time we performed R&J, I was a core dancer and never performed a lead role in a full-length ballet. She had done many, many, many times. And I just remember feeling like, I gotta raise my level, you know, because she's gonna bring it. So, like, if anything's bringing this performance down, it's me. So, like, let's step it up. So, she was a really inspiring force for me at that time. And over the years, just being able to repeatedly come back to the ballet. That's one thing that I've always loved is doing a ballet a second time, like after a year or two, just revisiting ballets. There's a comfort level that comes with each time, and we got to perform that ballet together many times, and so by the end it was, I mean, we didn't have to think much about it. It was just more about being present in the moment, and those are they're the best performances when you're not thinking and you're just reacting to your partner. And you know, she would always switch it up and act different or react differently, and that was always a challenge, a fun challenge. I got to perform Franz in Coppelia with Mara Vincent. I always loved Mara. She was just an incredible dancer. And so to be paired with her for, that was my first classical full-length ballet. And dancing with like one of the best classical dancers in our company, that was really, really a fun experience, and also learned a lot from that. But there's so many, countless like experiences over the years, and you know, one of my favorite moments on stage was performing Fancy Free with Seth Orza. That cast, this last time we did it, was Seth Orza, Jonathan Peretta, and me, and then Nolani Pantastico and Leslie Rausch. Like, what? That was just amazing. I couldn't believe it. Just to be on stage and you would just look around, you know, you're sitting at the table kind of like this, and, you know, there Seth goes and does a solo, and he comes back, and then Johnny goes and does a solo, and then, yeah. It was just so fun. It was a performance with really seasoned veteran dancers. Everyone was a principal dancer, done like so much in their careers, and we were kind of like at this peak, and that was definitely a moment. I'll remember that forever.
We've talked a bit about the choreographers you worked with, but some of the stagers too. I know we have Shelley Washington with us right now overseeing Sweet Fields. They're all so fond of James, but Judy Fugate was one that just loved working with you. Yeah. I think she might have worked with you even before you came to PNB, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't remember the ballet. It was a Balanchine ballet that we did in Pittsburgh, and I barely remember it. I was so young. She always reminds me of that time, you know, that we've known each other that long. And it's so cool that here I am, 42 years old, I get to work with a stager that I worked with back when I was 19. That's really, really amazing.
When you are retired and you wake up, let's say 3 weeks later, what are you so happy about? What do you not have to do that you're so glad you retired?
I mean, my body's going to be really happy, I think. That's one of the challenges, you know, when you're at this age. The work is the same, and you're out there with 20-year-olds, and they recover like that. And I don't. You know, I try. There's things that you learn over the years that will, you know, help give you an edge to kind of get back the next day. But it's tough. It's challenging, and that's really why I'm retiring, is because my body just can't do it anymore. I just can't keep up with the demands of a full season. You know, I feel like maybe optimistically that I could do that rep, you know, next year, but you know, I wouldn't be able to do the following one, and then maybe I could do that ballet, but you know, the season, it's really a grind, and it's really like a young person's art, you know, like there's a reason for that. There's a reason why people retire, and I'm lucky to make it this far. I really am. I'm jealous of painters, musicians, opera singers, right? They're hitting their prime in their 40s, and like artistically, I feel that way. Like I feel like I've matured in a way where I really want to continue exploring that, but like physically, it's just not going to happen, you know.
You're absolutely right. We have a company of, you know, all ranges, but a lot of people are 20. There's some 19-year-olds, people in their 20s. Who should people be watching for? Who's catching your eye as a young talent?
I love this. There's so many young dancers here that it's going to be really fun to watch them gain more experience and mature. Like, technically, there's some phenomenal dancers, and then you can tell there are some dancers that are just starting to break out. One of my favorites is Luther DeMeyer. Yeah. He is fantastic. He's a taller guy, and I noticed him in one of the school shows. I didn't really notice him before, but what I noticed about him was his quality of movement. He's so smooth, and really bright, super smart. Also just loves it. So, you know, when you got that love, you know that it's going to take him far. Let's see, who else? I mean, there's so many. I don't know if I could single out. There's an apprentice coming in that's going to... He's good. Gosh, so many. I mean, I could just go around the room. I mean, you could pick some qualities out of every dancer that's in this company, you know. But what I appreciate also is that I think, you know, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but I think Peter doesn't just hire bodies or technique. You know, he'll hire people. And I think when you have a room of 50 dancers, like, personalities matter. It counts, you know. I think it can go sour really quickly, like, because negative energy is spread around really, really easily. But in this company, it's not that way. And it hasn't been for a long time. So when you get a good group of people that, you know, that love it, right, and have really positive perspectives and outlook on not just the career but life, and you get a room full of those people, a lot of good things can happen just from that. So.
And back at you, one of the best role models you could have in a company, just to step up and support people and say a nice word when it was needed, but it really, it's a culture and you're a huge part of that, so grateful for that. These guys have some really good questions for you, I can feel it, or some memories, so please share away, yeah.
This is not a really good question, but now you mentioned that when you were in school, that your close friends were not kids from the school, but from the ballet. Yep. And I was just wondering, did that have, do you think it had anything to do with the idea that the boys just don't do ballet?
Mm. The observation here is that James' friends were in the ballet school, not the academic school. Do you think that had anything to do with that boys don't do ballet?
I grew up in San Francisco. I think I was lucky. I didn't get that at all. I know a lot of dancers that did have a rough time being a young dancer around that age. I had a friend that just couldn't believe that I got to touch girls. And I told him about our pas de deux classes, and it just blew his mind. So no, I had a lot of support, actually. A lot of people that they were just really into it. They thought it was really cool. Equated it to a sports activity, and then I also had a lot of support from my teachers. I think also I wanted to do this seriously since I was 12, and I let it be known at school, academic school, that I had a path that I was going to pursue, and so I had some support there from my teachers.
You know, that reminds me, I want to mention your parents who have been here almost every time you dance for 20 years. Yep. We're always so happy to see them, but I'm sure they were supportive from the start too.
Yeah, I got a tremendous amount of support from my parents, yeah, definitely. My parents have been season subscribers at San Francisco Ballet for probably 50 years. So they know ballet too, especially my mother. She knows what she's watching.
Pressure.
Yeah, you can't hide much from her. But she wasn't like a ballet mom, where she was overpowering. And, there are those, but I didn't get that kind of pressure from them. But definitely support all the way through. They let their son move to New York when he was 15, so that's nice.
Other questions or thoughts? Yeah, in the back.
I want to say I was really glad that you referenced the Coppelias the first time you did it, because I came to several of those performances, and everyone that I brought, we felt they were the most enchanting performances that we'd almost ever seen in our lives. Mm. And they still reference it to me, people who come from Eastern Washington to watch. Mm. But I also had a question about State of Darkness, because that was so visual and visceral, and I just wondered how you could possibly
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a good question. Thank you for reminding us about that tour de force role that James has. First of all, a wonderful compliment about James' performances in Coppelia many years ago with Mara and how enchanting they were to you and your friends. State of Darkness is a 34-minute solo done to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, choreographed by Melissa Fenley. She was the only cast to perform it for many years. She came to PMB and worked with three, if not more, casts. What was that like to do?
I also thought, how am I going to perform this? It's a beast. I mean, it's 34 minutes. You never leave the stage. I remember the first time I did it, I had a panic attack 10 minutes in. I couldn't breathe, and like my mouth was dry, and I was like, I have 25 minutes left. Like, how is this possible? that ballet, it taught me a lot. It really taught me a lot. First being that your physical body is capable of a lot more than you think. And that was a shock to me. I didn't know that you could have levels to it. Like, I thought once you get tired and you're exhausted, like, that's it, that's your limit. But that ballet taught me that, no, actually, you have two or three or more levels above that. And then when you get into that state, it becomes a whole other thing mentally. And that was also part of that process, right? It was, you want to get into a flow state. You want to get into this... And it takes being that exhausted to get into that state. And then when you do, something switches and it becomes sort of an out-of-body experience. It's kind of rare that you get into that deep of an experience on stage. And then you have the orchestra playing the Rite of Spring score. I mean, the best seat in the house to listen to it. It was really just a profound experience for me. What else can I say about that? It was freaky because the way Melissa teaches that ballet is you're in the studio with her and she presses play and starts moving. And she doesn't stop for 10 minutes. Yeah. And you just have to follow along and learn it. That's not how we work usually. And then at the end, she'll kind of talk about a few things and she'll do it again. And that's how you learn that section. And then you move on to the next one for 34 minutes of material. I haven't worked like that before or since.
And I find the beauty of so many dances that we do is there's, you know, there's people entering and exiting. There's different wings. You go off and rest. Mm-hmm. You have repeats in choreography constantly. But this didn't, mm-hmm. there are like no repeats.
Yeah.
There wasn't any logical sequence. So the mind game involved with that was mm-hmm. as severe as the physical challenge.
Yeah. You know, I was in there with Jonathan Peretta and Rachel Foster the first time. And Jonathan's famous for coming up with names for each step, right? So he'd just have a sequence of names, and that's how we remember things. I never operated that way, and I've never been a dancer that likes to count music either. I just want to hear it, because I feel like if I'm counting numbers, I'm focusing on numbers and not like the phrasing of the music. And so that it was a difficult process. I think it would have helped me if I could have access to like kind of naming things. But you know, my process always has been just to get it into my muscle memory as soon as I can. And then once I have that, it just feels more comfortable to me. I don't want to be thinking about anything. I just want it to be in there and then to hear the music and then to be reminded of what comes next. And so when I got to that process, or to that point in the process, then like the fun started to begin for me. But up to that point, it was a brutal experience. Yeah.
Sorry. Other questions? Or thoughts? Yeah.
So we lead a troop of Girl Scouts. They are in high school right now, and they are looking into what they're going to do in their life. Mm-hmm. You've known, sounds like, since you were almost born, mm-hmm. that you were going to do this. But are there times that you questioned it? Are there times that you had doubt, or you thought maybe you wouldn't move forward and do something different?
Yeah, so referencing some young adults in the crowd here that are figuring out what to do, and you seem to know at such a young age what you want to do. Were there times that you questioned that or doubted that or redirected?
Absolutely, yeah. I think I was lucky to know, right, at 12. Like, I had some experiences back then where I was like, yeah, I got it, this is it. Like, this is such a cool thing. But it was a rough road. I mean, especially the later years of training, you know, not knowing that if I was going to have an opportunity to become a professional, right? That was huge. I always have felt that for a student, the hardest thing you're going to do in your career is to get your first job. It's so difficult sometimes. Some people are lucky, but then once you have that first job and you can be established in a company, then if you want to go somewhere else, at least you have that experience of being a professional already. But yeah, I think... So it was kind of around the time I came to PNB, and again, when I was looking to audition to lead Pittsburgh Ballet Theatre, I wasn't getting a lot of offers. And so then I started, you know, questioning, like, you know, am I made out for this? Like, people don't really see it in me. So then you start to second guess it all, like, oh, maybe, and I think a lot of it was, you know, self-preservation. Right, like, you know, you're getting a lot of negative feedback or what you perceive to be, and it's kind of like, okay, like, you're young, right? I was like 20, 21, 22. You know, my reaction was kind of to be a little defiant and sort of protect myself and be like, I don't need this, right? Like, I can do other things. And I remember even when I got to PNB, I was feeling that way as well, even though I had this great opportunity. But I was still in the core, and I was doing the core roles, and, you know, it wasn't guaranteed for me to make it, you know, and a lot of my friends were in major ballet companies and doing well at that point, and yeah, so it was a tough period, but, you know, I just feel like if you find something that you love, and you're gonna find a way to persevere, right, like, It's gonna break down barriers for you if you just follow your heart. So I think that's, you know, I got some more opportunities to experience ballets like Moby, and it just kind of reinvigorated me and then gave me the confidence that, okay, maybe I can do this, you know, just like I thought. Like, I think I'm gonna be able to have some success here. So, and then I just kept stacking those experiences, and then, you know, Suddenly I'm here.
James, we talked about the waiting to hear what's ahead for Seattle Dance Collective, but do you have other projects on the horizon besides the ballet schools that you're thinking about? Anything you can share?
Well, I'll get to stage Mopey next year. That's going to be fun. You know, I did stage Mopey for Ezra Thompson and myself with Seattle Dance Collective for our Program 1 performances, but I'll get to do it here at PNB, which will be really fun. There's some young dancers that are going to have the opportunity to perform that role now that haven't done it before, and it's going to be really interesting to see what the experience is like for them. You know, I think my goal there is not to sort of push what I feel the ballet is, but to kind of let them figure it out for themselves so that they can take ownership of it, and I can just pass along this, you know, what I've learned from it and give it to them and see where they take it, you know.
Yeah, can't wait. Yeah. Good time for maybe one more, yeah.
Personally, I just wanted to say that your Hilarion in Giselle was really wonderful, especially the moment when you turned to her and says, "What's wrong with me?" That all my friends love that, just so you know. But my question isn't so much about that specific role, but about the way that this company and ballet in general has changed over the last 20 years. You have a as someone who's been in the profession for a while, you have a bigger point of view about this. You've seen more stuff go on. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts that you could dredge up really fast about what it was like when you started. And you were, we chatted once briefly at the beginning of your career here, and you were, you know, you've done Sleeping Beauty, and you've done the core work, and, you know, the guys with the flat hats, and the ribbons, and you're a very different dancer now. And I'm wondering if you see the change in you. Do you see the change in the field?
So a nice compliment about James in Hilarion, which we did this last year, and the strength of his character. But really a question of, you have a unique perspective 20 years in. How have you evolved in that 20 years, and how is the field or the company involved in that span?
Well, I think the rep is much different, right? Like, I think you start with that, where there's a lot more contemporary work. And I think Peter's been at the forefront of that, leading that charge, right? Like, when I joined in 2004, major ballet companies were doing contemporary rep, but not like we are now, right? And now you're starting to see some other companies like Joffrey, Boston Ballet, Houston, you know, even New York City Ballet, they're doing more of the contemporary rep that we've been doing for some time now. And so that's much different. That kind of affects the way that you train as well. You know, performing a classical ballet or neoclassical ballet is much different than performing a piece like a contemporary work. Is you use your body differently, use different muscles, and so I think that's a huge change. And so then the cross training becomes different as well. So it's not only like your class and the type of class that you're taking, the combinations in the class, but also the stuff that you're doing outside of the studio, and to prepare yourself to handle a different kind of workload, that's changed. But also, I think as a society, our perception of beauty is changed, right? Like, PNB used to be known for really tall, skinny dancers, and that's not the case anymore. But it was like that's what a lot of people thought was beautiful, and it is, right? But there's also a wide range of what is beautiful. And so you're going to see a lot of different body shapes, and I think that's wonderful, right? Like, I didn't fit into the mold of a tall, skinny dancer, you know? I've never been particularly flexible, and I think the contemporary rep opened a lot of doors for me. To be able to perform ballets that I wouldn't have otherwise. Like, if we were just strictly a classical company, I don't even think I'd be here still. So the contemporary work really has maybe opened some doors for a lot of other dancers to be able to participate in a large ballet company like PNB.
James, so well said. Thank you for that. Yeah. If I could express my gratitude for James, we'd be here a long time. I just want to say thank you for speaking with us. James is dancing tonight, too. You're going to see him in Crystal Pites, the season's canon. He has one of the opening duets. I also wanted to point out Luther de Meyer, if you're watching for him, he'll be the center guy in Sweet Fields in the last movement. He's the one that starts the neck pounding. So come over to look for it. James, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Peter. Nice.
So good.
Yeah.
I hope you're next.
Yeah.